I'm Eric Heiden.
I'm Nick Mason.
I'm Jeff.
I'm Ezzy.
And I'm Andre.
And this is Neon Static. Hey everyone, welcome back from that cool musical intro break that we did. We are here live in a room sitting around cool couch situations.
So I just assumed when people did podcast recordings, they would just go and insert that in text. But no, we all just sat around the room trying to laugh quietly while this intro played.
We had a very a stifled, hilarious dance party. Yes. Yeah.
For the record, QTM does it the way you've suggested.
Okay.
Yeah. We used to do it that way, but then we got this cool piece of tech that makes it. It just hit the buttons. It's nice.
Yeah. I mean, it reduces. Hey, it's one fewer cut that you have to put in.
Edits way down. It's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. It is easier for Eric and it is weirder for me because when we're doing it on Discord, I can't hear a goddamn thing. So I'm like just sitting there like, okay, all right, at some point. And then Eric will forget and be like, Nick, why aren't you entering the next segment? Why don't you just go? Yeah, because I can't hear a goddamn thing. That's why.
So we are here at Mansion Runner 2024, which is an exciting place to be. We're just day visitors here, but the rest of y'all are here from Thursday to like Monday. You're leaving, right? So how's that been going, everybody?
It's been 2 days so far?
Yeah,
it's been really nice. This is my first Mansion Runner. This has been going on for a couple of years, so there's like maybe 20 people here. There's some Netrunner. There's just a lot of other board games. It was like, you know, communal cooking, and like we played a whole Heat tournament. Shout out to Izzy.
Did Izzy win the Heat tournament?
I got second every single race and won on tournament points.
That'll do.
Ultimately, that's efficient.
Consistency is king.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or queen.
Yeah, it's been nice. It's been like a really nice vibe. The Netrunner like big tournament that y'all came in for, that's tonight. So we're looking forward to that. We got to dress up for that. It's gonna be fun. And
I did bring a suit jacket.
Exactly. Yeah. No. I think it's gonna be great. It's been good. I'm totally stoked.
Yeah. Someone described this as like it's going to a board game convention, but you know, or at least like everyone.
Yeah.
Because it's like, yeah, everyone has the common interest of Netrunner, and then most people you've probably seen at least to some level on Discord or, you know, in some other setup.
So, I like your ordering there. Good. No, or at least like. That's,
yeah.
That is so indicative of this group. The vibe is great. Everyone's very friendly. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, Izzy has been schooling me and Andre on Go. We've been having a nice time with that. But,
yeah.
And then Andre pulled out a like 6-inch tall Netrunner deck or something.
Yeah, I got 70.
No, it was almost like a foot.
I'm just playing Commander. Yeah.
I play Commander out there. That's what we're playing tonight, by the way. It's my Commander deck I'm bringing to the event.
Like double sleeved and there's two cards in there or something?
It's two cards single sleeved, but then it's like 70. So the deck is like I have one of those old FFG deck boxes. I don't know if you're familiar with them. It fills up a whole thing.
Normally those fill a corp deck and a runner deck will fit in one of those.
Yeah.
Excellent. And this is a runner deck. Yes.
Yeah, I got to shuffle this one a lot too.
Gotcha. Yep. Yeah. Oh, that's true. It's also a runner deck that tutors
all
the time.
Yeah.
At least once a turn when it's running well.
So World Tree Ari.
Yes.
Yeah. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. I don't see it played in person a lot. When Tech Tree first came out, which was the deck that Andre published, he had a stream on. If you haven't seen that, go check it out. It's quite cool. I built it in paper and got to play for like a weekend. And the shuffling's not as bad as it might seem because you're like, you sort of do once a turn, you shuffle then like while your opponent is sort of starting their next turn, as long as there's not some weird ordering in there. But yeah.
Yeah, we found some weird ordering things. Like now Muse is like slightly order dependent.
Well, so
also kind of not.
It's actually not. Yeah. So yeah, this is the thing that like, I think I've even said on stream that like you install the Muse and then lily pad draws and then, like you resolve Muse, but you actually can just choose the order. So you can just install Muse, search, and then draw, which is actually more or less strictly correct. And I need to go bug the JNet devs to make that supported.
Because JNet does it the other way. And then you have to say from which zone it comes from. And it's, you can mess it up in theory.
I think, by the way, if you're thinking about any merch branding that you want to do for your YouTube channel, Jeff, that you should probably print a t-shirt that says strictly correct on the front because it was like very on brand for you. So this is going to be obviously a more casual podcast episode for listeners of Neon Static. We're not going to do the normal segments. What we will do one segment.
Is it the Jank
Don't
Bank?
Don't say it.
Is it the Jank Bank?
Said it.
My favorite segment, the Jank Bank.
the segment we specifically agreed not to talk about.
Andre's head just like retreated into his body like a turtle. Like
it's so bad.
I'm either forcing Eric to edit or to leave this all in, which I think either outcome is great for me.
Yuck.
That mentioning that was strictly correct. Yeah. So I guess without further ado, let's go into the depths. All right, so into the depths, I'm going to let Nick explain what we're doing today because we have an idea.
All right, so we've been tryharding, right? That's the whole tournaments and all this other nonsense. That is not what Mansion Runner is about. Mansion Runner is about having fun and just enjoying the Netrunner world. So we're going to talk about card flavor from Rebellion Without Rehearsal, specifically like cards that don't make sense entirely. Like most cards in the game do a very good job of combining the mechanical stuff that they are doing with the flavor. These are some cards that I just have questions of on like where those two meet up, and we're going to talk about them. First one. So this is one that it's a very good card, but I don't understand how it all works together. And it's Corporate Hospitality. It's a 4-cost double operation out of HB. As an additional cost, play this, spend a click because it's a double. And it says gain 6 and draw 2 cards. Add 1 card from archives to HQ. So the gaining money and drawing cards, I get. You're doing like an event. Oh, yeah, yeah. And it has a 1 trash cost. If you wait in the Thunderbolt corporate box long enough, everyone who is anyone comes by. And yes, the art is like people at like a corporate box at like a soccer game. Football game.
So what is happening in this card? Why does this card, what's the Ludo narrative?
Now, when we were setting up for recording and we were going through the list of cards we were going to talk about today, Jeff was so immediately, no, this card makes sense.
Yeah, one is so obvious.
We had to stop him and save it for the podcast. So let's just throw it right to Jeff.
Oh God, I'm setting myself for a fall here. But no, I mean, so I actually think this is like somewhat consistent with a lot of Netrunner lore where interfacing with people is a way of getting resources. And in particular, it's often associated with card draw. Quality time to me is like one of the archetypical examples.
Oh, the flavor quality time. Like I know the flavor text by heart. That card's sick.
Yeah.
Damn. Okay. It's like her and her pad, me, my rig, jazz, soft jazz, lights are low, love blooms. Like, oh, so nice. There's like only 3 texts of actual mechanical text or 3 words on the card, and then it's all flavor text. It's sick.
Yeah. And so to me, you know, there's like, if you think about like, okay, yeah, we're a corporation, we're sponsoring a box, and influential and important people come through, and we'll be able to use things from people that come there. Maybe we make some money off of contracts, we get some ideas off people of R&D. Archives Recursion is a little bit of a stretch, obviously.
That's sort of the one that I'm most interested in. Like, how? Is it because like we're reusing ideas of other corporations that have already done this thing or something? I don't know. We can create our own canon here.
So like this also comes up in another card I think it's going to come up, which is privilege access, right? Like the idea that like having this, you know, somebody on the floor specifically for that card, I imagine we might come back to it. Getting something back, I know for the runner, it seems a bit more scrappy. For the corporation, I'm not too sure. It's just like access to ideas and whether it's ideas that happened before, whatever.
I mean, some precedent, even in the same set, for powerful people being associated with recursion from archives. So like powers that be lets you install from archives on a score. And that's the same sort of thing. Anyone who's anyone will come by the Thunderbolt box. And that includes the president. And the president clearly installs from archives.
It's one of the main jobs of a president. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, politicians saying, hey, this thing was popular, let's do it again, isn't absurd, right? Yeah, so it's the, you know, we're not going to come, when you go to a football match, you're not going to be coming up with all of the greatest brand new ideas. You're probably going to be retreading some of the hits of what can we do that worked last time.
It's really well too with like the powers that be, because there's a team sponsorship card, and then this is like the sports card from the set, which is again, like bring back stuff on success, like go home team.
There's a key team sponsorship card, meaning powers that be is like the previous card.
Exactly.
Sponsorship.
Yeah, it has the same text entirely on it.
Well, you and a couple other people, I think, have been referring to powers that be just by saying team sponsorship.
Yep.
And for folks like me who weren't playing during team sponsorship times, it's like,
what is that?
What? And I had to kind of figure this out for myself. So listener, you're welcome if you didn't know.
That's a good point of, Yeah, because I even call it, I just don't even, I when you said the powers that be, I did not remember what card that was.
I struggle with that name specifically too. Yeah, yeah. Team sponsorship is kind of burnt in there for better or for worse.
And
yeah.
I could see it too, like in the archives part of it, like now that you put it into the terms of like interfacing with other people and things like that, it could be like somebody going, oh, hey, you know, that idea that you guys had that you were working on, you guys really haven't done anything with that in a while. You know, I had this great idea for how to use that, you know, if you're like networking with a group and you want to, you know, make inroads with them, being like, hey, I paid attention to like, you know, I know like the B-sides, you know, the stuff that you haven't done in a while. Like, I know that stuff. Why don't you bring some of that back?
This got weird.
Do you think there's any cynicism? Because it shows up in other like historical card games, I guess. But like the whole bread and circuses idea of sports as like a way to placate the masses, that comes up in like some cards in Netrunner, but I don't think we've seen it in a while. I don't think it's this one.
Like distract the masses.
Yeah, exactly. Distract the masses is just like a come watch sports,
which we saw played at Mansion Rammer.
Yeah, yeah. But also recursion cards go back. Same idea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's interesting. That's an interesting call out.
So speaking of getting things out of the trash or archives. Privileged access. This depicts someone apparently with a ID card of some kind. It looks like they're sneaking into a corporate place. There's a whole bunch of people at desks and everything. It's a zero-cost event. Play only if you are not tagged. Run archives. If successful, instead of breaching archives, take a tag. When you take a tag with this event, you may install one resource from your heap, paying two less. And at threat three or higher, when you take a tag with this event, you may install one program from your heap. So, yeah, this one's a little bit weirder because it's getting stuff from your heap because you are accessing the corpse archives. Like, what do we? How do we think that's working?
I think this one's a slam dunk. I really, really like this one. So the character in the on the image, if I'm not mistaken, is probably an Iru clone. And so these are the clones that I think work in the workforce, right? Like that's inherently a lot of clone stuff. So we see a bunch of Iru clones through the whole cycle. So the idea is if you're not tagged, so if you're clandestine, you're working this job, you have a privileged access somewhere at a corporation, and you can use that to like get, you know, forward momentum. It's a sort of idea like having, seeing people, getting connections, pushing yourself forward. If it's stuff that's trashed on your end, like, I don't know, if you can argue, get that back from the corpse garbage or... The short of long is like it's an Iru clone going to work. And after it, because they've clearly ran off with some information, they're tagged, and then Seb has to obfuscate that. And then, you know, you go back to work the next day. I really like this one.
Nick on the way down, I think we were talking a little bit about this one in the car. And the idea that maybe like if there's a connection trashed, the Ludo narrative of like the corporation is like holding someone hostage. Like they took your connection. They're holding them in a back room somewhere. And then this like gets you access, but then you're tagged because, you know, you're like breaking someone out effectively, kind of like Katorga breakout feels a little bit, but anyway.
I don't know if it has to go even that hard. Like the idea is maybe if you get some sort of information from the corporation and suddenly, you know, Julie shows up and be like, whoa, wait, actually this is interesting. I'm on the case, you know, anything that.
Yeah. There's some hand waving that can happen. There,
yeah. Yeah. But the idea is like, oh, I'm in, this is something cool we found together. On the art too, and I don't know if this is intentional or not, because like the background is clearly a bit more desaturated than the main character, but the person on the right wearing that gray suit and like black turtleneck, I think is almost exactly the sort of color palette that you saw in the Pravdivost people, who are all like the gray suit Czechist folks.
Czechoscion.
But like that doesn't make sense for the context of where this job probably is, but the sort of like corpo look in the gray suit is quite intimidating, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Smug.
I think a large part of it is just taking advantage of those corporate resources to direct them to the people who you may have not had the ability to get back in touch with.
Yeah.
Like the level of which like you've used a resource and they've had to go into hiding, but you're going to go and use your privileged access to go change something in the corporation to make it so they no longer like to shake their tag for them, to get them back into the fight in a way that the corporation was preventing before, but you're now changing that narrative. You're stealing that or changing that in their databases. Like you're making some change in order to enable their return.
Right. And the fact that it's archives specifically that you're going after to do that would also like make sense flavor wise. You're not going into like R&D and changing what they have coming up. You are going into, like you said, the databases themselves and changing that. It's very like Ferris Bueller reducing his number of absences kind of thing, you know? Like,
yeah, this feels like an accounting break-in. Like
you're breaking in, you are changing something to like hide that Julie was involved in that last big assault on the corp or something.
And as far as the programs go, like, I would assume that most corporations who are doing any level of actual defense are archiving some selection of runner programs that are being used to break their ice for analysis. And as soon as you're in there, why not grab a copy of some useful program that you're already familiar with?
Yeah, that's awesome. That's what I was looking for. Is perfect. Oh, yeah. Such a win.
This is a flavor thing I always want to see. And I think Cubone actually kind of is like the first kind of thing about this, but I really want to figure out, I think there's like this cool thematic idea of a runner that like is like, oh, I'm going to actually have the corporation run my rig for me. Because I think that's like super like fun idea of like the runner's like, oh yeah, I'm going to host all of my software that I'm using to break you on your servers. And I don't know how you make that work mechanically.
I think PowerTap kind of gets there.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I'm running off of your lines.
Yeah.
PowerTap, I like that is a really good shout out. It's something I'd love to see kind of explored it at some point.
Yeah.
So speaking of programs, this one is, interesting. Coalescence, a two-cost program, 1MU at a shaper. When you install this program, place 2 power counters on it. Then you can spend a host of power counters to gain 2 credits. Use this ability only during your turn. And then the flavor text of breathe in. Be as the dew rolling down a leaf. Let yourself go. Breathe out. How does meditating make me money?
Go ahead, Jeff.
So for me, credits are not always strictly money is the first way I would start approaching this.
Can I register an objection?
Sure.
Jamie showed me earlier the part of the rules that actually contains flavor text. Yes.
Wait, what?
So if you go into the comprehensive rules...
Nick is a lawyer, professionally, by the way.
If you go into the comprehensive rules, section 10, or 1.10, is credits, and it tells you what a credit represents for the corp and for the runner. So for the runner specifically, a credit is a meal at a nice restaurant, night out at the Sensi's, and minor upgrade to your rig. Yes. And for the corp, a credit is like the ability to manufacture a run of computer parts or the ability to create a movie or a Sensi, whatever they're called, and the ability to buy a nice restaurant.
So that is expressing that there are different scales of resources, but we're going to let Jeff continue his thought.
So,
but they're money.
Or their nice experiences.
Yeah.
No, they're the money to buy the nice experiences.
You don't have to get an... I have had many nice dinners out that did not cost money, but cost other resources that could be absolutely spent as spending credits in that context.
All right, Jeff, continue talking. I mean, tell me why I'm wrong.
That is so I think there's that point of one thing. It's like, yes, you can have like a... have made something else in the process of getting this program. Like, to some extent, a program isn't meditating on its own strictly. Like, I would not look at Coalescence and saying, oh, yes, the runner has to install a program so they can meditate, and that costs them an extensive amount of resources, because you can do that today if you want to by opening up YouTube. That is not an extensive use of resources, right, in many ways. To me, though... You could also be like, oh, hey, by being at calm and at peace, if you want to go that route of meditation, that can open up resources that you were going to spend on something else. So, you know, instead of going to the Sensi's, which maybe was a mandatory part of your relaxation budget or some other mandatory expense, you're reducing expenses in one place and going elsewhere. Not the strongest argument for theme or ludonarrative coherence here, for sure.
There's like this ongoing thing that I don't think I can speak confidently about, but there's constantly an overlap between like spiritualism, meditation, and the Shaper card pool across like a lot of different, you know, spiritualities. Like we saw Atman back in the day. Oh, there's probably dozens of examples.
Yeah, Saharsa, I think, is also.
Yeah, these are the sort of ideas of like meditative and the idea of like, why does a Shaper run for self, you know, exploration, for self-development? Like those line up there more than other factions. So, yeah, I don't know exactly how it attaches to the resources, but that sort of idea of like producing something from nothing, creating value from like thought. Like, what does coalescence mean in theory? Like, two things together as one? But like the actual word.
Yeah, the definition, the Merriam-Webster of whatever.
I think it's something like
coming together
into a coherent piece.
And for me, I think that's a lot of what the card is about. Like, it's clearly meditation themed, but the theming you bring to a program is not what the program actually does. It's just an expression of the author's intent and how they feel about it. Whereas what Coalescence actually does could even be as simple as combining a bunch of data streams that are already on the web, coalescing them together into something that is more valuable than the individual streams on their own in some interesting way. Which you can then turn around and pass on to, you know, someone else, another runner, in exchange for other resources, those credits, a nice dinner, maybe.
Beautifully put. Nick looked up the definition of coalescence, which is the joining or merging of elements to form one mass or whole. That's a really cool take on it. I like that a lot.
I think, you know, it's kind of like, what is Rezeki, right? It's like, there is this real theme of Shaper, like, programs that do just kind of, exactly what they are isn't clear, but they do go and do the generation either through this meditation flow or...
What isn't Rezeki?
In general, you'll find that with the cards we're talking about, largely they're corp cards because the runner cards are extremely straightforward. It's like, it's a program that breaks other programs. We don't need to know exactly how it's achieving that, although there's one that's very interesting that we'll talk about later. Okay, next card.
All right, Warm Reception. A lot of these are HB cards because you'll find a theme. Anyway, Warm Reception. It's a one cost, political asset. It's a Ritzy out of HB. When your turn begins, you may install one card from HQ. Okay, good. Warm Reception, start of your turn. Good. You cannot score that card this turn. Okay. Rules thing. That's fine.
Yeah. That's a balance card text.
If this server is not protected by ice, you may derez this asset to derez another installed card. And then the flavor text of, I missed you last week. Come, we have lots to talk about. How is Little Sarita's piano recital? And has the two trash cost. So what's the derezzing? What's that mean? What do we think?
Every time I've gone to a child's piano recital, I have fallen asleep.
I have re-rezzed the doctor.
This is just representing your working prototype running out of energy because of children's piano.
Yes.
It's not working prototype. It's Warm Reception.
No, but that's the card you're de-rezzing is working prototype. Come on.
Okay.
Also, I do wish people could see the video because...
Nick and I are sharing a mic. We're getting uncomfortably close every time.
Yeah. It's the worst. We're all hoping for a donk sound to get picked up. A donk or a kiss. Who knows?
Okay. What's the Warm Reception though isn't the piano recital. It's talking to someone else about their kid's piano recital. Okay. So now that's even more boring and I'm getting it. Okay. that's a description of a child's piano recital by a third party. Okay. All right.
You don't like when I talk about my kid's concerts to you? Or is this a passive-aggressive way of telling me this? Or?
No, Eric, I'm extremely invested in how good your kids are at climbing walls. That's a that's a thing. Yeah. They do climbing. They do rock climbing, I think.
Yeah, okay.
It's got tens in here.
Yeah.
I'm starting to understand why when I suggested they cuddle, they both refused to say no homo.
I don't, okay, for this card, in terms of the derezzing thing, I'm not 100% sure, but that's okay. In terms of like, you know, I like the focus on this where it's, you know, the relationships between people, because I think a lot of times on the corp cards, it's not focused on the people level. And I like the people level on corp cards. I think it's really fascinating. So like clearly this person cares, or at least for the benefit of their job, they need to care. I think it's so funny. I don't know in the art brief if they really wanted to get that awkward moment where one person goes for a hug and one person goes for a handshake and you don't know what to do.
It's happening.
It is so great. Good.
Okay. The de-resing thing, I don't know. That seems more mechanically to make sense with the rest of the set. Like Thunderbolt in general kind of wants you to do that, I guess. Yeah,
I'm trying to think if there's like any other like thematic tie-ins, but like... Yeah, because resing, it's... Yeah.
Because when you res an asset, it's like something opens up, right? Like when you have created the Maryland line, it's being sold for the next four turns, stuff like that. Like that makes sense. But for this, you know, mechanically how it's used, it's like, oh, working prototype a bit faster, spin doctor one more time and stuff like that, which maybe that makes sense. It's the idea like these relationships open up, you know, the same things.
Yeah. It's like the way, it's like, it's the idea of like, oh yeah, we're going to continue this relationship that we already have.
Yeah.
And the way you express that mechanically in Netrunner is actually through de-resing so that you can get the res effect again. And so it's like, you know, if you want to be super ludonarrative, it would be like, oh, resolve a when this is res effect on an installed card.
That'd be cool.
that, which may be a cool way to do it, but I think you also want the, like, hooking it into DRes allows for more as a cost, or as like it just gives it more interplay in the systems of Netrunner rather than just doing that. But, you know, that could maybe be an intent you could read behind it. This is like you're reopening a relationship that you already have.
Business continues, yeah.
Especially with like the campaigns where like I think it's even more than just selling them. It's like you're always selling the Maryland like line. The campaign is an advertising campaign that increases sales of it.
You're like rebooting.
And so like, of course, like, yeah, extending the Maryland campaign another four turns would absolutely be a warm reception kind of thing to have happen.
Right. You're putting more money into the marketing of that thing so that you have, you derez so that you can pay that money again kind of thing. Derezzing in general to me seems loosely or semi-strongly tied to diverting power from one place or resources or energy in one place, literally divert power, to another. So like, you know, the card divert power, taking other cards down, diverting that power to one to make it cheaper to rez. I think, I don't know if it explicitly ties in here, but there may be other cards, I'm not sure if we'll talk about that, that had that same kind of theming here where it's like, you're taking resources away from this place in order to do this other thing. And I don't know if that ties in well here or not. But
I'd have to look at what Elvigar bifurcation actually is supposed to mean.
Oh, I think it's a river from Norse legend. I forget what, though. It's been a moment. Excuse me. Somebody who's listening to this definitely knows.
Let
us know.
Like a lot of the Thunderbolt stuff, like as on like the divert power angle, like makes sense because it's you're derezzing some ice to give other ice either more subroutines or strength or whatever. Like all that stuff kind of makes sense. But like this one stuck out to me as it is very like mechanically, it fits in very well with the HB set, but I just wasn't sure what that derez like meant. But yeah, the idea of getting the on res effects again as being like the goal of it also kind of adds to that. It's a warm reception. You get to meet the person and get, you get the benefit of meeting and greeting the person again, kind of thing.
Yeah,
if you look at assets that way.
Like the political subtype shows up across cards here. This is a subtype that showed up earlier in like FFG, Netrunner, long years ago. But the idea is that you only get that if this is not iced. It's sick. It's like you can only literally be met with open arms. There's no ice on this.
The Ritzy subtype is tied to the uniced thing?
No, political. No,
political.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So the idea is that these things are open to the public. Like they're the outward facing.
Actors Union.
Exactly. Sensei's, clone suffrage movement. There's a whole bunch of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it would be a lot harder to have a warm reception if you're like going up and then getting a pat down immediately before the hug.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That does somewhat change the tenor.
Yeah. No, the political subtype is sick, and I think it lands really good in the set in general.
Perhaps there should be a pat down. I hear there's some knives flying around.
That is true. Yes. I might have brought some. So next up, and this one I feel like is going to get dark, but Cohort Guidance Program. It's a one cost Jinteki asset. It's a clone. And it says, when your turn begins, you may resolve one of the following. Trash a card from HQ. If you do, gain $2 and draw a card. Or turn one face-down card in Archives face-up. If you do, place one advancement counter on an installed card. It says, the best families grow, learn, and hunt together. It has a two-cost, two-trash cost.
And the art is obviously, for most people have seen this, right? But there's it's like a child daycare, like a baby daycare for clones at Jinteki. And the thing that I didn't notice in anyone discussing this initially is that in the background, there's a two-way mirror. And there are three faces in red, which are, they've got like very ominous sunglasses, kind of their executives overseeing the process in like dark red. And it's amazing. The only reason I know this is from seeing some higher res photos of the image. So that is so hard to tell, but it's so good when you see it for the first time. And you're like, oh my God, that's creepy. But
it's much clearer on the cards in person than on Netrunner DB.
Yeah, for sure.
It's funny because it's obviously a one-way mirror, but in the art, you have to show it like that, but then it's functionally the worst one-way mirror ever made.
Did I say two-way? Yeah.
I meant one-way. No, you're right. It's a two-way mirror.
It's just a window.
Yeah, it's a window.
That's just mom, dad, and mom. And yeah.
I'm sure it's electrochromic and they can adjust how
they're letting us see for our own.
Yeah. It's a non-diegetic one-way mirror.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is happening with the two modes of this card? How are we explaining? So trash, let's start with the first one. Trash one card from HQ. If you do, gain two credits and draw one card. This is the darkest potential timeline. What does this mean? in terms of baby clones?
I think for context, we have to like zoom out a bit, right? Because Jinteki makes clones, and then a lot of clones they make are very specialized clones. And so actually like through FFG, you can follow the clone line because they're named by first starting letter. So Akiko Nisei, I think, was the first Nisei clone. So the Nisei clones are meant to be like the psionic clones. So the clones that kind of do pre-crime, see the future, stuff like that. So the B clone, I don't think we've seen. Caprice is the C clone. And Caprice was like the stellar one. That wouldn't do well. Akiko broke loose, I think.
Akiko broke loose. I think we didn't we get...
And Akiko broke loose.
Is there a Bernice?
No. But I think that's... I think the original Akiko...
Oh, no. Lethea Nisei was the card I was thinking
of. Yeah. Then Lethea is the L. So there's a whole bunch that we haven't seen, of course.
Yeah.
But the idea is that these people are being, you know, trained and bred and raised to become something very specific. And I'm assuming in context of Atea, especially like Adrian, who's now, a Sice, these are clone hunting clones. So the idea is some of these projects fail. This is the dark subtext there. Do we get rid of that, push ourselves forward, or not fail? That they're sent out into the world, into archives, face down. And then later the sleeper cell activates, something like that. And then you get some sort of forward momentum. I think there's a lot of ways to read into this one.
Yeah, I actually don't think it even has to be killed. Like, you know, it's the, you could almost think about it as like, oh, it's your, you're like doing a refinement. You're understanding how you're supposed to guide this cohort more.
Yeah.
And we've learned, we're going to spend resources that we've kind of learned from and then use that to guide the program. Now, maybe that does mean, you know, culling babies because we, you know, that's what simulation reset is, right? Like, Jinteki goes dark places. Like, this is not
really dark.
But I don't know that that's actually the implied thing on this. I'm not saying it's not, right?
It's not necessarily.
But yeah. And especially with the, like, yeah, the second effect of like, oh, you'll get value out of the cards you throw out later. I think there is actually some credence to that idea of like, yeah, we're going to put this clone line out. We're going to say it's for one thing, and then it's actually for something else.
Absolutely. Like, cards in HQ so much represent not actual things you have, but the ideas that you're currently thinking you might pursue. And absolutely, it makes a ton of sense to have a guidance, like a group that is growing and learning, make decisions like, okay, actually, this was a bad idea. We've learned this because our psychic clones have determined that actually there's not a rebel cell here. It's over here. So we need to attack it differently. And so changing the ideas you have in HQ, like, could be clone retirement, but certainly doesn't have to be.
And then you can even take that from that, like, you're archiving something, right? So you're taking something that you were working on and putting it into the archives. But that's like a lesson that you've learned.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and this is the thing about cohort guidance program is like when you have multiples or if you get to keep the cards face down, then you can take that same thing that you threw away earlier and turn it into advancement now. So like it is literally learning from the lessons of what you've thrown away to turn it into advancement on an agenda currently. Like the fact that you have gone through and like weeded out these bad ideas actually helps you do your current thing more efficiently.
Yeah, this is my favorite card in the set.
Yeah. I will say also, from if I'm remembering correctly, like in FFG lore, like clones have a lifespan of like 3 to 5 years.
What?
I think.
Why does Atea hunt? Just wait a bit.
you can close that in a whole department.
But that is like on the time scale where like, oh, you start the project of raising a clone and they're like, you know, maybe they're like ready in a year or something. And then
I think Sebastio's lore with Iru supposes that they've been together for longer than that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But that's like the whole thing of like Ken Tenma is like live fast and die young because he's not ever going to grow old.
But that's because he drives really dangerously.
Yeah, that's more of a personal choice.
No.
I think it might be different per different clone.
Yeah,
it
exactly. That could also be the case.
But like
too. Clone
retirement, you saw the clone that they're retiring in that FFG art looks like they've aged quite a bit, but that could be accelerated aging.
That was my understanding. And that also might be FFG lore that NSG doesn't use, or it might be me misremembering lore from 2014. Like,
well, and one of the things about Seb, too, is Seb was the subject of a Jinteki experiment when he was younger and is now, like, working to undo that on himself. So if he's already digging into Jinteki's genetic programming and trying to, like, mess with that a little bit, maybe he's also using it to, like, extend Iru's life or something like that. There are, like, ways you could play into that as part of the background. It's nothing explicit, but... All right, next card. So this is a Seb card. It's a Boy Tata, which I am almost certain I'm pronouncing incorrectly, if anyone wants to.
I think that's right. I think the pronunciation guide says that's like just about it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well then. Yeah, I probably should have consulted that because I knew that I was going to be saying it on the... Anyway, it's a three-cost, 1MU program icebreaker killer. If you trashed any of your installed cards this turn, paid abilities on this program cost one credit less to use. And it has interface, two credits, break up to two sentry subroutines, and then three money for plus three strength. It is one strength on its own. And then the flavor text is, blinded by its own wreath of flames, the boy Tata seeks eye after eye until the whole world joins it in darkness.
If you feed it a nice meal, which is about a credit, then it costs less to use it because you spent the credit.
Oh, I'm taking the boy Tata to
the film. It really likes to eat cards. Cardboard, yes. Best dinner.
Does anyone here know the myth?
I know it as much as I have it on my phone right now.
Okay.
All right. I'll pass it to someone for a more serious answer.
Okay. I love the callback, though. It was great.
So a fantastic creature belonging to the, I'm going to say, Guarani mythology is a myth from Brazil, Paraguay, Uruguay, and Argentina. The creature is a huge fire serpent that appears and attacks against those who harm the forests and animals of the Amazon. He is the Brazilian equivalent of the Will of the Wisp. This is from a Myths and Folklore Wiki fandom page. So, yeah, if things get trashed, gets angry.
And the history, like I read the exact same page, yeah, but further down.
We're experts.
Exactly.
Yeah. I love that we all did the Google and click on the first option. And
this is why you're coming to us, so that you don't need to Google it.
Exactly. So I guess like the story is that there was like a time of darkness and nobody else could see, but this one snake that wasn't called a boy Tata at the time, could see in the dark, so it went around eating its favorite part of things, which was their eyes. So eventually, ate so many eyes that the light from the other eyes made it burst into flames and die, and also become a fire snake eternally. That part I'm a little less clear on.
Yeah, it becomes like the sun in some of these mythologies or something. Hmm. But like, yeah, to some extent, it's the idea of big, hungry, mythical monster. You feed it, and so it is happy and works better for you.
I like the idea that it attacks things that are hurting the environment, basically. And like, we know that Wayland is slash and burn.
It's only your cards.
And specifically, you have to trash them. If the corporation trashes a card, that doesn't count as you trashing it. Yeah, it doesn't count as Boitata.
But the mythology of Boitata, like, it says that it likes to harm things that, you know, come after its environment.
For sure.
And it's you know, breaking subroutines against corps who are doing that.
Yeah.
So
it's like we had Audrey in the last set, which is another like feed me monster. I need fuel. And it's like, is the fire snake meant to be more aggressive than Audrey? It seems like Audrey is the one the corps should be more scared of, which is kind of fun.
But like, is it so you have to feed something to the fire snake though to make it like more efficient? Like that's the part to me that is a little weird, because it's not like going out there and eating the corpse things for you. You've got to like entice. It's like, it is like, I mean, it's a dangerous animal. It is like fire. You have to feed it and it, you know,
What was your question again? You've explained the ludonarrative mechanics of this perfectly.
You got to feed your snake for it to be good.
We just wanted to talk about it, really.
No, it's fine. I think it's a fun, you know, and yeah, going back to Izzy's thing of like, it's not that there is a literal boy Tata in the program world, right? Someone made this, and maybe, you know, we're in a world where programs do have a little bit of life of their own. I think that's the fun way to interpret a lot of the stuff in the Netrunner universe, is that, you know, someone made this program and then some stuff happened and like it started to grow a little bit of a life of its own. But maybe it is just like, hey, this program, like, it wasn't quite good on the first crack, but if you feed it a little bit every time, it like as it runs a little more efficiently. You know, you throw it at GPU and it burns up the GPU real fast, but it breaks a little bit better.
It gets angry when the daily casts are over, and then it just fires itself up.
We weren't talking about flame out, Jeff. It's a very strong joke.
So strong, we all immediately knew it was a joke.
Yep, I had to stop and go, wait, is that the one that you see, like, you put 9 credits on it or something like that? Anyway, so moving on from whatever that was.
Wait, does that work? Flame out, Boitata, is that a deck? Anyway, go ahead.
No, it's end of turn.
Yeah, it's end of turn, so you wouldn't get the trash in time. Yeah, but Boitata in
an Aesop's deck where you then sell the flame out
or World Tree.
This is just how I operate all day. I just think of two cards and go, wait, does that work? Is that a deck? And then the answer is almost always no.
Yeah, yeah. Then you have to come up with a real jank combo to make it work. And then, like, every now and again, Sebastian K will come in and say, yeah, actually, no, that deck slaps.
Yeah, I've won.
It's too bad Shaper doesn't have a one credit break two subroutines killer in faction because Voitata, like, it's only two influence. We can play it with Aesops and... Oh, wait, there's Ika. Oh,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but this one is a snake. It's on fire. It's so cool.
Yeah, we can.
You it's
can
such a cool card.
You can play your Sleepy Snakes deck with Boitata and Tranquilizer, and
yes, excellent.
EP Snake.
So, all right, last one. I promise. Stoke the Embers. It's a 4/2 NBN agenda. It's an initiative, and it says when you score this agenda, gain 3 money and place 1 advancement counter on an installed card. When you install this agenda from anywhere except HQ, you may reveal it. If you do, gain 2 money and place 1 advancement counter on an installed card. And then the flavor text is up next, President Tavares' state funeral. And the art is like a newscaster, and at the top it says, new president vows to veto the automata initiative. So there's a new president who's vetoing the automata initiative, but didn't NBN want that? I thought all the corps were like kind of united in wanting the automata initiative to be passed.
They were, but then a bunch of people died.
Right. But how does, so like,
they also, actually, never mind.
Spoilers for the narrative if you haven't read it at this point.
Spoilers for the narrative that I got told about, but
spoilers for Dan Bucci poking his head in. Say hi, Dan.
Hey, Dan.
Hi.
So what I'll say is, it's not super clearly depicted on the cards, but from my understanding, Wayland was, there was like a Wayland and HB were actually somewhat in opposition on this. Or with some like uprising and revolt stuff going on. So there was some conflict there. But going back to like, so it's like, you know, I think it's the like Envy and the Stoking the Embers. This art is clearly like a story point beat in the set. Like thing happened. Now it does seem like NBN was the force behind the automata initiative, but also just because like, if you're a news network and you're trying to do something, Or I guess we're Prav Devost, we're behind the scenes, or not Prav Devost, I'm sorry.
Epiphany.
Yeah. We're trying to make behind the scenes political stuff happen. If it fails, well, oh well, we'll try again and we'll make a new opportunity out of it. Like that is the insidious part about like a media organization is, they're going to turn their failures into new fuel.
Yeah.
I don't even think it's necessarily a failure. NBN wanted the initiative, not for the initiative to succeed, but to create the social unrest in a situation for them to take advantage of. And Stoke the Embers, I think, like obviously a 4/2, they could just do it as a 4/2. Install, advance, wait a turn, advance. But when a big event happens and you're able to be like, hey, no, newsflash, we're blasting everywhere, president has been assassinated, now you can drum up so much more public support so quickly for things that otherwise could never have been passed. Things like, to make it a little too real for a second, the security theater bills that happened after 9/11, where you can take these massive events and use them, not because the thing that you started to make it happen was the goal, but then to make some change in the way the world works after it, regardless of the outcome of, in this case, the automotive initiative.
Yeah. Yeah. Why did we look at this card and go, what's happening here? Because it seems, it plays out very well with what.
Well,
what
but
we've
no,
been talking
I
about.
Do think there's also like this, you know, to be fair, there's like a literalist element of like the exact thing that's happening on the card is a little bit incongruous, right? Or incongruous, like where, yeah. NBN, the card is about the finality and like a failure, like, you know, a way to look at it is, oh, NBN failed at getting the automata initiative passed. But then, yeah, as Izzy was.
But that's the thing, too, is like in the lore, I think the assassination of the president, which is not clear in this newscast, like they also downplay the assassination element, right? They just say.
Yeah, they just say state funeral.
Right? Which that seems kind of wild. I'm not sure if it's attributed who has, because we know in the story. mind you, yeah. Mercury does assassinate the president. But
oh, that's an interesting point. So it might not even be public that it was an assassination.
I don't know.
This could be a poorly timed.
I think that could be one
heart attack.
But the thing is, like, I'm not sure the timeline between the death of the president versus the Thomas Initiative being vetoed finally. Because this might be between the next couple of minutes. Like, the Thomas Initiative might still be happening.
Yeah, I mean, given that the headline is new president vows to veto.
And presidents does, have never broken their promises.
That's the like banner text across the like Chiron scroll. Which also, I mean, I know it is fun. Like, it is a funny. This is like a funny conceit of card games where the Chiron needs to go on the top of the screen rather than on the bottom, like every Chiron ever. But that's just make it work for a card frame, which is totally fine. It's
I did not know the word Chiron until just now. So that thank you for that.
You're welcome. An old one, yeah. From like old, I think, graphic systems.
I mean, yeah, it's just what the thing is called.
But I think it's because that's what the technology for it in like...
It was like the brand. Really?
Decades
like Kleenex
ago used to
or
be,
Band-Aid, but Chiron.
You know, I'd never looked into why... Okay, now...
Not now,
now
Jeff.
I'm going to Google live on camera.
No, it's the cameras. so that's
our next card we're looking at is Chiron.
So just real quick, the part where it... When you install it from anywhere except HQ, you may reveal it to advance it. Like that... Tying into the fact that it's like NBN, like you were saying, unveiling a new narrative.
Yeah,
right?
Opportunistically, they're taking advantage of something that's happening there.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's not something they were planning. It's not something that was in HQ, an idea they'd already had. It's something where they're like, hey, we can get in on this. We've manufactured a spot where these moments come up where we can control the narrative.
And like mechanically with Epiphany, which is like, we know the future slightly, hopefully, and then it's like capitalized now from the top rope and accelerates and goes. Like that works really well together.
Right. Or if it's like restored from archives, it could be like a spin. They're like, okay, something bad happened. We need to find a way to spin this in the news. And that's now what they're doing. They're making money off of it because they're turning it into a news cycle in their, you know, their radio or TV stations and radio stations, I suppose, if they still have those in the future, are making some kind of profit on this.
There's going to still be radio stations in the future. Because you guys are making an audio-only medium in a world where cameras are cheap, right?
That's true.
Audio has a place.
Isn't Smoke pirate radio?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, there's still radio
but,
out there.
But at the same time, everything with Smoke always also has them.
The face.
Like the Daily Cast has their face on it, right?
Well, and yeah, yeah, the fact that you have to reveal it too, like just being like, if you're kind of improvising your narrative, it's a little more obvious what you're doing. So like your agenda is revealed, right? It's not like the multi-phase plan that NBN would normally rely on. But all of a sudden, like this person's dead and they're like, all right, we're playing it by ear here. And
I do like the tie-in with Epiphany, but there is a part of me that wants a card that's just like a... You can install this agenda either face down or you can install it as a public agenda and you get a benefit when you install it as a public agenda.
Yeah,
that seems
cool.
Like...
We got to redo vulnerability audit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Oaktown's rotating soon. Maybe we'll have an opportunity for that.
Yeah.
So that's all the cards that we had to talk about, at least on our list. And we all have some board games to get to. I don't want to take up the whole rest of everyone's day. So I think... We'll sign off. Before we do that, I want everybody to just give a quick shout out because you're all content creators. And if you are listening to this and you don't know who these people are, I guess we maybe should have done this in the up front. But why don't you just start with Jeff?
Sure. Yeah. I run a channel called Yazengren SC. Good luck spelling that. It starts with YSE. So, you know, have fun from there. And I do pretty much very much like... trying to go from the I understand the basics of Netrunner to how do I start like playing competitively in events, and that's kind of a big part of my channel's focus. And I do streams once a week on Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern.
I'm Izzy. I'm the community team lead for Null Signal Games. You can also find me quite frequently on the Queering the Message podcast. You can find that at queeringthemessage.net. I do not have as concise a pitch as Jeff does, but we're fun. We're gay. Come listen to us.
I think that's pretty good.
Hold on.
That's
a really much better pitch. Also, I should probably say, yeah, you'll also, I am the manager of OP, so you'll see me do stuff in that capacity as well.
And I'm Andre from the Matchball Grid. I've been making Netrunner content for a while now. You can find me on mostly YouTube. You can see me on Twitch if you want to. And do deck dives, live streams pretty regularly. That's Matchball Grid on YouTube.
Bonk.
And with that, thanks for listening. Remember to run with your eyes closed because what you can't see can't hurt you.
Is this my personal problem? When you're on phone and you go do like the syntax search and you search like X colon and then it autocorrects to like Q or A or something?
Yes. No, it's
apparently
not.
It's the worst.
It is the worst.
Literally the worst.
I am used to, I can't operate
my phone
anywhere
has,
near as quickly without a keyboard and mouse. Like the phone,
it's such a struggle.
I'm such a boomer.
My phone has started autocorrecting Netrunner terms to the point where it's like starting to mess up my ability to text other people.
Oh, it corrects into?
Yes.
Have you told your phone, no, this is intended? Because you can do that, right? You can like put in,
usually what I do is I like type in the characters and it'll be like, the one option will be quotes around your weird misspelling or the real words. I'll click on the quotes. And if I do that like two or three times, it'll start going, okay, this must be an acronym you want to use.
Yeah.
Your phone just knows you so well, you start typing. It's like, Jeff, do you want to build an optech?
Just give it a couple of years.
A little clippy shows up at the bottom. And
here's your border controls.
I need, maybe that can be a Jeff Learns machine learning project.
Yeah. Let's see how quickly it can build you a functional optech.
Jank Bank is still on there. That's funny.
It makes my skin crawl every time I hear it.
That is such a good segment name. No, that segment name can never change.